Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Game Grooves podcast. I'm Peter Gillette, and this is Family Jewels. You all should love him and know him from all of his cover and stuff.
They probably might know me, but not all love me. It's fine.
Well, you know what? That's fair and understandable. But if you don't love him, leave right now. It's an aggressive podcast that we run here. And if you don't love our guests,
good.
Yeah. But you should know him from his channel, Family Jewels, or from the music he's done on games, such as, I forget the how to actually pronounce it, but most recently, Cadence of Hyrule. What's the Crypt of the Necrodancer? Did I say that correctly? Yep. I'm so sorry. I screwed that up. I don't know, or most likely you know him as Doorbell Guy. So
most likely.
So first off, do you think that was a fair, good enough introduction of yourself?
It was okay.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, it was all right. We'll move on.
Yeah, we'll move on. We'll I'll get better at this. Cut that whole part out.
Cut the podcast like right in the middle of a conversation.
Right in the middle of a conversation, we'll cut it and then we'll roll with it. I'm sure the audience will love that. Either way, let's open up with new news regarding you, which is the Cadence of Hyrule DLC. So do you want to kind of outline that? There's new tracks and you composed some of them, is that correct?
It's kind of unclear. I feel like, because I guess technically we are composers, doing the new tracks for it. But I won't say too much. I don't want to give away too much of the surprise.
Gotcha. Don't.
But there are new remixes and. Myself, Arrival, and Chipsil are composers who contributed those tracks to the game.
Sweet. So, how much are you allowed to talk about that? Because I know it's not quite released yet. Can you say much or not at all?
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay.
I feel like I'm probably not going to give you too much more than what the trailer gave away.
Cool. So, let's throw out the DLC conversation of that, and let's just talk about what was it like working on a Nintendo licensed game or outsourced? I don't know exactly what to call this category now.
I mean, it's an officially licensed Nintendo game. It's very much still like an indie company making a Zelda game, essentially, which is wild. And I think I've talked about it before about how like it, I definitely felt the weight of it the entire time of it, because even putting to the side that Zelda is like one of my favorite series of all time, Ocarina of Time was probably the first game that I got like deeply obsessed with as a kid. It's a very, very, very special franchise to me, very, very special series to me. So, I mean, that always weighed on me while working on it. I think I definitely grew up thinking like, oh, what would it be like one day working, on a Zelda game? And I guess I always thought it would be like this, like, super just, dream come true, which it was, but it was also a responsibility. Like it definitely felt like, even though it's not the next Breath of the Wild or whatever, it's still an officially licensed Zelda game. It's still like,
and like
there's still a lot of responsibility.
The first indie one,
I mean, the CDI games are arguable, but
we don't count those over here. Okay,
some people.
So, okay,
don't
some
count
people.
Them.
Okay, fine. But
I would
the first good one.
I'm not gonna use words like that. Okay. But
fair. Okay.
But objectively, it is the first time that Nintendo has given one of its IPs away to another company to make something with it, officially since the CDI games, since, as far as I'm aware.
So it's still Mundman regardless.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a huge step for all indie people ever. You know, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like Nintendo is definitely the company that's like, they're like one of the biggest boys, probably the biggest boy of video gaming, that like, you know, indie companies are like, oh, well, maybe one day I'll be able to do like, maybe one day I'll be able to do something with like Square Enix, because they have like their whole green light system and stuff like that. But like Nintendo seems like completely like unattainable.
Like,
but like
behind,
I think,
golden gates.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that, one, the fact that, you know, Nintendo worked with Brace Yourself on Cadence. And two, because, I mean, it was so, you know, it was widely received as being a very good game.
Yeah.
I think it's a step in the right direction for there to be more situations like that in the future.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
because it's created such a cool community around it, and it's great remixes of original tracks and all of that really great stuff. So like, what's it like working on a game rather than you know, making a cover for your channel, for example?
It almost doesn't even feel like the same, like
two different
playing field. Yeah, it's totally different. I think I always thought that, you know, doing game covers and stuff on YouTube would prepare me for the one day being able to work on a game, but what making YouTube videos has become is a completely other kind of beast that, you know, I think the biggest highlight of it was that I can make is, I remember talking to Grant Kirkhope a few years ago, and he specifically was telling me, he's just like, I have no idea how you learn and record a song all in 1 week for a YouTube channel. You just do that weekly. Like, I'd never want to do that. And this is coming from the person that, like, you know, wrote these huge, tons and tons and tons of tracks for like one video game. So it's like, if that doesn't highlight, like, you know, on one side, it seems like the other is just a complete monumental undertaking. Like, I could never imagine doing the kind of stuff that Grant does.
Yeah.
But apparently it's the same on the other way. So on the other side. So I think that just kind of highlights how different the two things are.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Well, great. So speaking of something that's like a completely different thing. Well, I don't know if it's completely different. It seems different enough to me. Let's talk about some of your speedrun live streaming stuff that you've been doing lately. With Super Mario 64, what exactly inspired you to do that, and you know, everything around? That's not a great question, but you know,
I think I was actually inspired. So I'm in a band that originated back where I'm originally from, which is Massachusetts. And the drummer in my band, Zach, we were at Magfest, and he had like an N64, and he was playing Mario 64, and he was doing all these tricks and stuff on our, like, on the TV in our suite. And I was like, whoa, dude, that's so sick. And, you know, I'm watching him like do BLJs and stuff like that. And this is like back in 2015. And I was like, man, you got to teach me how to do some of that stuff. So eventually he did. He like came over my house. He taught me how to do MIPS clip and the backwards long jump and like a bunch of different Mario 64 glitch tricks and stuff. And I didn't want to speedrun it. I just kind of wanted to learn the tricks because I thought they were kind of cool.
Yeah.
But then I decided that, okay, I want to speedrun. Like, at some point I just, like, that inspired me to want to speedrun in general. And I actually didn't end up learning Mario 64 first. I learned Banjo-Kazooie 100%.
Ooh, interesting.
So that route. Because I thought it would be, like, while I had this, like, drive to learn how to speedrun.
Uh-huh.
I thought I would like kindle that and do something really hard mm-hmm. that I knew that I would want to do. I had a really intense craving to play Banjo-Kazooie around that time. So I was just like, you know, that it would be really cool to learn the 100% route, because I want to get like everything in the game. I want to see like everything that's in it. And luckily, by then there was already quite a scene of speedrunners for that game. Mm. So there was a lot of great tutorials, a lot of great people in the community teaching how to do it. There goes my doorbell. It's a cough and dance right now. I learned the entire run, and then eventually I got kind of fatigued by it because it's a very long run. It's like a 2.5 hour run at a novice level. And I eventually went back to Mario and I learned the rest of the tricks for that. The whole thing with, so I've been actually speedrunning on Twitch since about 2016, 2017.
Okay.
Kind of off and on doing that with music. So like every once in a while I would do a guitar stream, or maybe I'll do production streams, or but the thing that I really liked being able to just turn on Twitch and speedrun. Like it, like with music, it's cool because I get to, you know, I feel like I've already established an audience who want to hear music and stuff. So to be able to play that stuff live, it was cool. So but I felt that was taking a lot of mental energy, and like I would spend all day recording and mixing and mastering and filming and editing and doing all this stuff with music just so that I can go on Twitch and then play more music. And I think at that point I was starting to feel like, oh my god, like I love music to death, but like I need a break. So when I started speedrunning, it was awesome because I could just work on this other hobby, but it was still kind of, you know, being there for the community who wanted to be there, like the fans who wanted to, you know, wanted to talk with me or ask me questions. Like I could just work on the speedrun, and if somebody had questions about music, I could like answer it. So it ended up being my favorite thing to stream after I was starting to get kind of tired out from doing music. So it just kind of started sticking, and now I pretty much exclusively speedrun.
Nice. So I remember watching one of the stream highlight videos. Well, first off, why don't we talk about that real quick? What made you decide to release the stream highlights?
I started a second channel, mostly because I, on Family Jewels, I felt like every time I uploaded a video that wasn't part of the main course of what Family Jewels was supposed to be, which is just video game covers.
Uh-huh.
I felt like there was kind of a drop in viewership, and I feel like everybody who's had a YouTube channel has felt that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think most people, you know, will be like, oh, you know, it's just because, you know, it's not the same thing, and I'll just whatever, and I'll just upload a video. It's fine. At least people are watching it. But like, what happens is, if you upload a lot of videos that don't do well, YouTube does kind of see your channel as suddenly not performing as well, so it's going to push your content less. And YouTube does a thing where it will recommend your videos to other people's browse sidebar stuff to kind of test market it against other videos and see how well it's doing. And if it doesn't perform well and it doesn't get selected as much, it's not going to be recommended as much. Gotcha. And that's pretty much the extent of the algorithm, really. I mean, everyone thinks that the algorithm is, you know, all of this like really complicated, like, oh, you've got to make sure that it's 10 minutes and it's got to have like all of these things. And like that stuff is great for monetization. Mm-hmm. But like, I think, you know, when creators have a thing to blame that's not themselves for their videos not performing well, it starts to kind of unravel out of control. Mm. And that's kind of what we start seeing with everybody complaining about the algorithm all the time. I mean, I do think that, you know, the algorithm is a thing, and it is sometimes unfair, but I also
there's a way to like dissect it and use it to your advantage.
I'd honestly say there's no way to dissect it, but you can pick up clues on it.
Gotcha.
What I was seeing was that the more you either don't upload or upload videos that do poorly, It starts affecting the whether or not YouTube wants to push your channel out to begin with.
Gotcha.
So I decided, well, Family Jewels wasn't supposed to be a thing where I do talking videos or meme metal covers, and I want to do stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So why don't I just make a second channel where I do that? And, you know, I started doing a bunch of different things, and I started realizing that I loved watching Mario 64 speedrun highlights from people like Clint Stevens or Simple Flips, you know, and all these other channels that I wanted to try it myself. So I actually made a few of my own, but eventually I met an editor named Hypercole, who now takes over editing for those stream highlights, and he does a very, very good job.
Yeah, I personally, every time that anyone comes out, I'm like, oh, sweet, I'm in for a good time. Great stuff.
I'm glad. Thanks. So we're done with the Mario arc, but the next speedrun arc starts tomorrow.
Ooh.
From the time that we're recording this. So by the time this is out, it's probably already out, but... so the next speedrun arc for Jules Conroy is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2.
Ooh, I'm excited.
And my goal is to beat all the goals and golds in under 20 minutes.
Wow. So that's a much shorter one than Mario.
Much shorter. Yeah, so I can get a lot more runs out of the way. So each highlight will actually be going through quite a few different runs, and in some cases, maybe a few days.
Oh, wow.
Of going through it. But mostly because, like, we wanted this to kind of be a shorter, like, we're definitely seeing it. We're definitely, like, kind of jokingly seeing it as like an anime arc where, you know, you have these seasons, but then, you know, there are like shorter arcs every once in a while. Yeah, this is definitely a filler arc leading up to the Banjo-Kazooie arc. But we also like comparing it to just kind of how, like, we're so behind on YouTube now because, you know, Cole puts so much time and effort into all these highlights and it shows that now it's very much just like the YouTube fans get the American dubbed versions and then Japan gets the more current uncut and gritty versions, and Japan
or
is
it's like,
Twitch and yeah.
It's like the manga versus the anime.
Yeah, very much. So that's kind of how we're looking at it. It's what's really great, the community is really blown up, and it's nice because, you know, a lot of these ideas come from the fans, you know, and it's just a fun way to interact with fans that you wouldn't normally get to with music. So I definitely the main reason I started going so hard with the Mario highlights was actually AlphaRad.
Okay.
I was hanging out with him a few months ago before when human beings could, you know. be in the same room as each other.
Yeah.
We were working on some stuff for AlphaRad Plus and the AlphaRad channel, and I was talking to him about, like, I want to do more Mario highlights and stuff, but like I don't know what to, like, how to, like, market them. Like, I don't know, like, I want them to be something interesting every time. Like, and he was actually the one who was just like, dude, just make some stream highlights and figure it out later. Like, you know, and that's actually like what really led to me kind of being like, oh, like, yeah, I don't know why I'm thinking so hard about it.
Yeah.
Like, so what I'll usually do is I'll just have Cole edit the highlight of that stream. We'll get a product together. And then once I have the video, and it'll literally be called like Mario 64 stream highlight this day draft, whatever.
Uh-huh.
When I upload it to YouTube, and then like, it'll like after the video is done, I'll like title it something that happens in the video, and I'll thumbnail it then. So like the actual idea and concept for the video comes like way
so,
after
like,
the video's already done.
Absolute last thing. It's just like, shit, need to come up with a title and thumbnail. Sure, this one.
Yeah, and honestly, since I'm like with YouTube, it's so like, I know a lot of people who do the covers and stuff feel this, where like in the beginning you're all excited to start this new song, and you know, you have all these great ideas for the arrangement, and then you start recording, and then you're recording for a while, and then you mix and master, and then you gotta write a description, and like by that time you're like so tired, you know, you've done all of this stuff yourself, and then you get to the thumbnail, and it's like, all right, just fucking throw Mario on it and I'm done. Like, and then like now with the way that YouTube works is like the thumbnail and the title are everything. So if that's the thing that you're shortchanging, you're literally shooting yourself in the foot, like literally with a gun. Like it, maybe not literally, maybe
literally.
I'm exaggerating, but like
it's,
you know, so like so much of it goes into that side. And it's so hard when you do everything yourself that I don't blame a lot of people who, you know, who have trouble with like those final few parts of the project that require the most attention to detail and the most creative energy. And what's great about the Mario highlights is after I'm done streaming, that's literally the next thing I have to do. And that's also the last thing I have to do. Like, I don't have to do all the editing and all of that stuff. So I can really like
really
use all of my shitpost brain to, you know, to like really make something truly cursed out of every single thumbnail and title.
Well, and it is truly cursed in both the the title and the thumbnail.
I'm glad.
Yeah, beautiful stuff though. I'm seriously really enjoying that.
Thank you.
And I can tell a lot of other people are doing that too. And well, speaking of other people, how's the reception been? I mean, it seems to be getting plenty of views, but like, what's the comment territory? I watch on a TV, well, so I don't read the comments.
The comments are good. I definitely think it helped that the doorbell video kind of launched that channel. It was a little intimidating at first when I saw how many views the doorbell video was getting. Because like, I was kind of in between like these two schools of thought where like I started the channel so that I didn't have to worry about views and I didn't have to worry about like it was literally supposed to be like this shithole of videos that I would just like, you know, just throw into whenever I thought about making. And if anybody wanted to watch them, they could. But if they didn't, it wasn't going to hurt my main source of income, which was the big thing, you know.
Yeah.
So then what happened is that video started getting a lot of views, and I was like, wow, this is getting more views than anything on the main channel. So what do I do? Do I try to capitalize on this? And, you know, then I'm right back to square one, or do I continue to make shit videos and, you know, like risk losing this opportunity? So it took me a very long time to figure out what to do with that. And honestly, I did the worst thing, which was nothing. I didn't upload on that channel after that because I was so
it was too many. Too many views.
Yeah, I was really blown away. So I did a few things. Like I did the Simpsons metal thing and then, you know, just a whole bunch of other random stuff. But I don't know. Like, I don't really have any regrets, though, because I don't know. Like, if that happened to me again today, I don't know what I would do.
Okay.
You know, I was not expecting that to happen for that video.
Yeah. It's the most random video for it to happen to, too. I mean, it's a beautiful video, don't get me wrong.
Thank you.
But it's kind of random why so many people were interested in a doorbell.
I guess it's intriguing when you see that in a thumbnail and a title. It's intriguing to hear what megalovania sounds like on a doorbell. And that's all you need.
Scholars,
you know,
will study this video in the future and diagnose why so many people watched it.
Yeah, I can't wait to be in the meme history books. Kids are learning about it in school. I mean, it's not, like it's 10
chapter.
Million views, but I mean, there's channels. There's video game covers doing, you know, like Rashadi B's got, you know, covers that have over 10 million views. Jonathan Young, like all these, like it's for. I guess what sets it apart is like those are channels that have been working hard, you know, and that was very clearly just like a zero effort shit post, you know, that exploded way bigger than it should have. Whereas like, you know, with some of these other music channels, I mean, there's obviously so much talent and obviously so much work, so that when videos like that end up getting that viewership, it feels well deserved. But I mean, I made the fucking megalovania doorbell video and I'm like,
yeah, sure.
I don't know if that one was deserved, but let's
see how it goes.
Let's just see how it goes. So yeah,
I
think
later.
I think it's nice that boosted the channel in the beginning to kind of get it up to the views that it has now. I mean, I would say that if anything, it was just a steroid for the channel that what it would eventually become, because now it's kind of just like exactly like coasting at honestly like about the viewership as my main channel.
Wow.
But
really?
If I were to not have maybe my main channel like a year ago, but like it's still like what matters is the comments, and what matters is like how many people are actually vibing with it. And that's definitely a lot more rewarding than like the doorbell video, where like the comments are just like, an absolute cesspool of garbage, but the Mario highlights are nice, because it is really nice to see people enjoy something I make that's different, that isn't music for once.
Yeah, definitely. Great. Well, so speaking of the music side, you've been making YouTube videos for a little bit over 10 years now, is that correct?
Don't remind me.
Don't
please.
So
you're making the hairs go gray on my head right now.
Good. I can't wait for the gray-haired family, the
salt and pepper family jewels. Yeah. I'm gonna go from gold to silver.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I never even thought about that. Like once my head goes totally gray, I could just change all my logos to silver.
Hey, there you go. That's gonna be really cool and very edgy.
And really show that I'm very much a has-been. Like, yeah, that was my golden age, and then now the silver age is like, no one really cares about that guy anymore.
It's like, you watch it to remember the old times.
Ah, right, yeah. back before COVID.
But yeah, back before COVID, because COVID is eternal now.
Yes, at least in America.
Oh, yeah. So, 10 years... let's talk about that for a little bit. So you re-released the Ocarina of Time medley. And what was the reception of releasing your first video again 10 years later?
I think it would have been better if I didn't delete the first one.
Mm.
Because I was very much like embarrassed by the first one. Mm. That I ended up deleting it and then starting with the GoldenEye medley. And I made the GoldenEye medley with a different recording software and everything. Because, like, I made the original Ocarina of Time Warp Songs medley with, like, Audacity and, like, a distortion pedal. Like, nothing else.
Oh,
I didn't have, like, an interface. I didn't have anything, man. So, I'm trying to think. I ended up getting Mixcraft shortly after,
okay.
And
I don't
that's
think
when
I've
I was just like,
okay,
the audio quality is a lot better. I'm able to mix individual tracks a lot easier. So that's going to be where my channel starts.
Mm.
But I feel like the reception might have been better if like I had I left the other video up and it was kind of just like oh, big oof. This
big
is
oof.
Where Family Jewels used to sound like, but now, you know, he sounds like this. So what I did was I actually uploaded the original video a few days prior. Like I just did a re-upload, like, hey, I deleted this is how bad I sounded once. And so I think it was cool. Like
was
I think
cool.
people there were people who remembered the video being up, which that would have actually been 2010.
Wow.
I think I might have deleted it November of 2010.
No, okay,
but
correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like I've seen it re-uploaded somewhere.
I had a second channel where I wanted to have it up in case people wanted to like
to do
I still wanted to have
work.
It up to just be like, hey, look, this is how I used to sound, man. So like, don't like if people are like, oh, I don't want to record because I'm gonna sound bad and I just want to buy a bunch of stuff. Tell me what I have to buy so that I sound good, and that way I can just like send them a thing that just says everyone sounds bad in the beginning. Just put it out and delete it if it sounds horrible, or don't.
Mm.
I mean, you know, do whatever.
Yeah,
but
do
like,
whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I do kind of regret not keeping it up, but I feel like what it ended up doing is like all of my videos across the entirety of Family Jewels are pretty consistent. So
that's good.
I feel like that video would have definitely been an outlier.
Yeah, for sure. So let's start talking about the beginning and maybe chronicle our way through real quick, maybe under 10 minutes or something. So you started with, let's maybe not say the Ocarina of Time medley, and let's say the GoldenEye medley. What kind of stuff were you using to film on, and, you know, what was your audio equipment and, you know, your process back then, too?
I had an iPhone 4. It was brand new.
Nice.
At the time. I had a, and that was my first cell phone too. I never had a cell phone until then.
Wow.
Yeah, I was 19 when I got my first cell phone. I was so blown away at the image quality of it, you know, 'cause I watched all the Steve Jobs, like, you know, presentations where they're like, this camera is literally sex, and if you film this mountain or this, you know, person in India, it'll look amazing, you know, and they make it look like it's like a, you know, DSLR, yeah, but, you know, but definitely looking back on it, watching its 720p like quality, I'm just like,
that is high definition, okay?
Yeah, high definition, that's right. But 720 HD sounds like a, like, it's so crazy how that sounds like an oxymoron now.
Yeah.
720 HD is like a joke.
It's a joke.
But like back then, 720 HD was like, I'm inside the movie. It's so high quality. Yeah. So I had that. I had,
apart.
I bought a, wait, what's up?
I can't tell the pixels apart on 720.
Yeah.
I can't even count that high.
Wow. I can count more than 4 pixels.
Yeah.
I had, a Pod, X3, which is discontinued now, but, friend of mine, ended up selling it to me used, and I used that to record, and I remember I Craigslisted a bass guitar, so I drove like a long way away to buy a bass guitar off of somebody, and I'm like, I'm gonna start a YouTube channel, and that was that Rogue bass that I ended up selling because it wasn't very good. But trying to think, but yeah, I bought that bass just to like make YouTube videos, and I had the Pod just for that, and I used Mixcraft for many, many years, probably like 5 years up until I moved, or up until just before I moved to San Diego in 2015, I used Mixcraft.
Okay.
And then I ended up using Cubase, but TuneTrack, Easy Drummer is how I got all the drum sounds. I just programmed all the drum hits individually. And I think that's it. In the beginning, I didn't even have any EQ or any compression. I had no idea what I was doing. I was just recording in and saying, all right, sounds good. Which is funny because like once I discovered compression and EQ, there's like a dip in the quality of my covers that because all of a sudden I'm like, wow, if I crank this, it sounds cool. And no, not in retrospect.
You know, that reminds me of something in the film world where whenever you move away from filming in your house or on location and then start building sets, you actually start to lose quality sometimes when you start to build sets because there's all of these small bits that you don't realize that are in an actual house, and then you have to spend 5 times as much to get back to the original quality that you're filming it at. So that sounds just like this this audio version of putting compression and EQ in whenever you first discover
very
it
much.
It's you have to move your way up. So
definitely.
Well, so when you started it, what were you kind of thinking? Just like you'll record something, put it up, share it with your friends. Did you ever think that maybe one day you might make a career out of this? Or
no,
just doing it for the heck of it, which is the
I just wanted to get better. I wasn't getting much better, and thought maybe if I made weekly videos, I would get better really fast. So and eventually somewhere down the line that ended up being the secret sauce skeleton key to being a big YouTube boy.
So was there a certain video or a certain point when you realized like, oh, this could be something that I could do for a living, and you know, I don't have to pursue any other type of career type thing, I could do this and feel comfortable doing this?
Well, back when I started, nobody was really making money on YouTube. It was very much just like a video website, like platform. Like it was no different from Reddit. Like to say like you would make money off YouTube is like saying like I'm gonna make money making Reddit posts. You know, that doesn't make any sense now, but that's what it felt like 10 years ago. I remember, you know, seeing some of the bigger YouTube names starting to say like, oh, we're making money, and like we're making money and we quit our jobs to make videos and stuff. And I think a lot of people were just like, how are you doing that? And they're like, well, ads and Google AdSense and stuff. So in the beginning, it was Google AdSense. There weren't MCNs, which are like, the MCNs are multi-channel networks. They're like, they're companies you sign with so that they kind of handle your ads and also help you get brand deals or...
So kind of agents almost?
Kind of. They're more like managers in a way, but like a very specific manager that talks directly with, you know, or like has a Google AdSense account or some other way of being able to pay out and stuff, and they pretty much handle all that stuff for you. And they get you partnered, essentially.
Cool.
So when a channel says they're partnered, they probably have a multi-channel network, is how that works. So I remember when I was obsessed with, you know, Social Blade and watching all these numbers rise and being like, oh, look at my numbers, and oh, look at your numbers. Your numbers are way bigger than me, and getting all depressed. I remember like it's the natural course of a YouTuber of both, you know, feeling imposter syndrome with when you get more views than somebody else, but when somebody else has more views than you, you feel like, well, what am I doing wrong that makes them get the views and not me? You know, like it's almost inevitable. Kind of. I hear that with almost every creator. Yeah. Just if you're listening and you're a creator and you're feeling that at every level that exists. Mm. But Social Blade had a thing off to the side where it's just like, do you like very much like a like singles in your area pop up that was saying like, do you want to make money making videos on YouTube? You can partner with Social Blade. And me being the young impressionable piece of shit I was, I clicked on it, and turns out Social Blade was part of their multi-channel network was under something that would eventually become Maker.
Really?
Yeah, so they were the Game Station at the time. So when I signed up with Social Blade's MCN, they bumped me up to Game Network. Oh God, what was it? Game Station. Sorry, I just said it. It was the Game Station, and then they eventually became Maker, and then eventually Polaris.
Okay.
Or Polaris. So, and then eventually, you know, PewDiePie and Disney totally killed that, and now that's not a thing anymore. But that was kind of the first point at which I was like, wow, like somebody can make money doing this. And like I signed up with them, and after like 2 years, I think I made $100. Like it was not very good. Like, because I was doing covers, like I couldn't like monetize any of it. But as time went on, you know, there was more guidelines for copyright and stuff. Because like, I mean, people think it's bad now. Back then, you didn't even have a choice to monetize your videos if it had anything that could be considered copyright at all. So, you know, not to get all granddaddy family jewels on everybody, but back in my day, we didn't even make we made $100 and we were happy. You know, like it's wild to think like in the beginning, you know, how I described it, where it's like Reddit. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, no one, you know, like I'm sure somebody makes money off Reddit, you know, but like to say like, I'm going to quit my job and be a Redditor. It's like, okay, have fun. That's what people thought of YouTubers. Like when you say, I'm going to quit my job and be a YouTuber, like people are like, wow, I guess I'll see you in a gutter in like 2 years. Like now it's like a legitimate thing. Yeah. Like kids are telling their parents, like, I don't want to be a lawyer, daddy. I want to be like Markiplier. And like, you know, and obviously the dad needs to tell the kid, well, no, you should still be a lawyer just in case you don't win the lottery.
Yeah.
But it's now like a thing that, you know, kids can very easily be like, well, look at this Twitch streamer who has like 4 viewers and just got a $100 donation from some simp. Like now it's like a thing. Like literal viewers are trying to defend, you know, their favorite YouTubers by trying to game an algorithm that they're complaining about. You know, it's wild how different it is now. But all that to say, I mean, it's, yeah, like, it wasn't even fathomable that I could make a living doing this in the beginning.
Mm. That was like the last thing you're thinking about. It was just purely make the cover, make the video. Do it for fun. Yeah. Do it for friends. Do it for all of that.
Mostly just do it for myself. Like I've always been doing it. Like even to this day, I feel like the main reason I'm doing it is for myself, because I want to get better. And I mean, right now I'm definitely like kind of going down a route of like, I am kind of leaning into the business side of it, where I'm really kind of just being like, okay, you know, like I've definitely landed, like the reason I wanted to get better is so that I could land some good jobs. And okay, like I was in Crypt of the Necrodancer, Cadence of Hyrule, like, okay, I got the jobs, now what, you know? Yeah. And I think a big thing is now it's just like, all right, well, should probably buy a house, I guess, you know, yeah. Like start figuring this stuff out. And that's kind of the stuff where it's like, okay, well, if we want to do stuff like this, then we got to really figure out, you know, how to you know, monetize it in a way that also doesn't feel like I'm selling my soul to it. Mm. And not to say that, you know, YouTubers are selling their souls to make money, but there's definitely a sleeping where you're shitting, where you're eating, etc. kind of thing with making money from your creative work. Mm. And I think that, you know, when I always try to encourage people to strive to find a balance between the money side of it, the mental, your own mental health side of it, and just all aspects of it. I forgot what it was. I had this like triangle thing that you remember the memes that were like, hot, smart, mentally stable for like a significant other. Yeah. You only get two, right? what I've learned is, no, like you eventually learn that you find the balance that's best for you somewhere in the middle of all of those things. Mm. You know, like if you're particularly good at being able to be a support structure or like a support figure for a significant other, then you might be able to deal with somebody who's a little bit mentally fucked up, or you don't think about, you think looks are very superficial. Mm. Like, so, okay. Like, you know, you find a good balance between all of those things. And I think that works with making content online nowadays, where it's all about finding a balance, but everybody always talks about it. Like, you only pick two, you only get to pick two. You have to be like, you're either selling your soul or you're making content that you love. Mm. You can't be in the middle. And I feel like that's not the case.
Yeah, there's definitely a space where you can both make money and also still feel good about it.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I've been trying to do, is try to explore where that space is for myself, because I think everybody's space is different. Everybody has a different middle ground depending on what they need and what they're trying to get out of.
So for you, this stuff. What exactly is that? Is that like finding the song that could be relatively popular or whatnot at the time, but it's also a song that you like, and then covering that?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, I think it's, you know, definitely I would say if it's a song that I really like that I think will do poorly, I might not do it.
Okay.
If it's a song that I don't like that will do very, very well, I probably won't do it. If it's somewhere in the middle, I will probably do it. And I don't know what will do well. I don't know what you know, if I'm being perfectly honest, like, I also don't even really know sometimes what I like, because sometimes I'll like a song that won't translate very well to guitar, or there's a song that I don't necessarily like that much, but sounds pretty fun to play on guitar. So it's not really as simple. It's never that simple, right? But I definitely think that that for me it's a balance, because I know that if I did a song that I really, really liked that would do poorly, I would put that video out and wish I put something else out afterwards. And if I put out a video that I didn't like and it did really well and I didn't like it, then I gotta like probably play that live someday and then talk to some, you know, somebody that comes up to me and is just like, wow, it's really great to see that somebody else likes that song as much as I do. And then I have to like, then what do you say to that?
Yeah.
You know, like that's the selling your soul part of it. It's just like, it's not fun.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't feel real.
That doesn't feel good to do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm always doing this stuff like it's a marathon.
Okay.
And trying to think ahead.
Cool. I think that's a great way to look at it, and also I think we're starting to wind down a little bit on this. We'll end the meat of this year. But let's talk about what's coming up in the upcoming weeks/months. Anything big, exciting, and happening on either your main or second channel?
Main channel, I just released God Shattering Star with Joe Zija.
Yeah, could you talk about that a little bit? How did that come about?
So I'm a huge fan of Fire Emblem Three Houses.
I love that game as well.
So good.
Beautiful. Such a great game.
Yeah, and Joe Zija is the American voice actor for Claude, one of the main three house leaders. And I think I saw one of his videos where he's doing all the he recreated a bunch of the flips and stuff because he's really into parkour.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of other videos and stuff, and he was very active on Twitter after Fire Emblem came out, and he really kind of pushed on Twitter, and I started seeing a lot of his posts and stuff. And I can't remember how I initially reached out to him, but I found out that he actually has been a very active member of the OC Remix scene.
Really? I didn't even know that.
For many, many, many years. So he's actually really good friends with Doug Perry and Nabil and all of these guys. And so when I went to NAMM this year, they're like, hey, we're going out to go have some food with Joe Zija. It's like, yeah, like that'd be great. Cause like we had at this point, like we'd try to meet up. And you know, I sent him an email. I think I sent him an email once and I was like, hey, you know, like I love all the stuff you're doing with the channels and stuff. I was wondering if you wanted to do a Fire Emblem cover with me, because I'm doing a ton of Fire Emblem covers, like for Three Houses. And this was probably back in like November, like probably November, December. So it was a while ago. But and you know, he was very busy, obviously, but he was like, yeah, what are you thinking? And I was like, well, I know you play, he plays I think clarinet and some horns and stuff like that. He plays a lot of stuff, but he doesn't do anything metal.
Okay.
Like that's his, that like, and he's just like, well, I don't know what I can offer because I don't really play metal. And I was like, well, you do voice work. You do a lot of voice work. Like, have you ever sang opera? And I think he was like, no, like he's like, not seriously, I've never been classically trained, but I have been hired before as an opera singer before for some reason. I was like, do you want to do God Shattering Star? Like, I feel like everyone would freak out because like God Shattering Star is the final song for his route, for Claude's route. So if they got to hear Claude sing that, and it was metal, you know,
yeah,
like that, like
sweet.
Hopefully that would just like break the internet.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then you know, he very sheepishly sent me these tracks that were obviously amazing. You know, pretty much what you hear in the cover is what he sent me. And yeah, it came together really fast. Mostly, I actually, this was the first cover that I outsourced the transcription for. Usually I do it all myself.
Oh, really?
But this is one that while I've been working on so many different projects, it's so tough to be able to, like, again, kind of what I was talking about earlier, where it's like by the time you get to the end of the process, you're exhausted. And for something like this, I wanted a really, really strong follow through. It would have sucked to like totally burn myself out on the transcription and arrangement of it. That then at the end, all of the final process, the video editing and stuff, which we had so much fun with, I would have had to slam and get done like super fast and tired. So, the transcription was done by a guy named Musical Jester, so big shout out to him. He did a great job, and all he did really was just kind of break up the parts for me, so that when I brought it into my project file folder, I could be like, okay, that's going to be a lead guitar, I want to arrange that for a rhythm guitar, and I want to do this. So he pretty much just spread out the parts for me, rather than like me having to sit there with the original MP3 and just tediously pick out every individual note. He just took so much work.
Made the kind of like a Cliff Notes version. Toward sense.
Yeah, he pretty much just he gave me like a MIDI version of the whole thing.
So he did that,
very...
and then you're able to translate that. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, it was just like being able to visualize the notes and move them around made it a lot easier to make a much cooler arrangement.
Sweet.
And I hope to be able to do that in the future, because as much like I definitely could never outsource my arranging. That's such a fingerprint of Family Jewels, you know. Like outsourcing that would probably start not sounding the same as what I would do. So, but being able to have a transcription written out for me so that I can actually spend more time with the arrangement is probably something I'd like to do in the future. But, as far as future projects, I actually have a cover coming out soon with, Jason Richardson, who's one of the most prolific guitarists ever right now, in the scene. He was doing solo work. He was in Born of Osiris, and currently he's now touring with All That Remains. Huge nerd, loves video games, and we bonded at NAMM over Banjo-Kazooie and stuff. And
beautiful.
We're going to be doing a cover of the Fairy Fountain theme from The Legend of Zelda together.
Ooh, sweet. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited because it sounds amazing. He's been working on it on his Twitch page, which is twitch.tv/, I think it's Jason R. Richardson. But yeah, I would go so far as to say he is like the most technically proficient, Jason R. Richardson.
Gotcha.
Probably he is the most technically proficient guitarist alive right now, I would say.
Oh, wow.
So
we're in for a doozy.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely incredible musician. So I'm really excited to release that. Other than that, I'm working on a few different albums that I'm hoping to be able to unveil hopefully the end of the year. Hopefully sooner, but I'm giving myself some leeway.
You know,
but
that's fair.
There's so many projects going on because I'm still doing weekly covers. I'm still doing streams, highlights on the second channel, as well as shit posts and tweeting really cursed stuff at 5 a.m. on Twitter.
Beautiful.
So
awesome. So I look forward to all of that. And lastly, what I'm hoping to make a theme of each of these podcasts is if you could outline just like one musician in the VGM space, but if they're not in the VGM space, that's fine, that you'd like to spread some love to, and then, you know, maybe a song or two that you really enjoy from them.
Yeah, the one that I've been really vibing with the most right now is Scott Tune Network.
I love that guy.
I love Scott Tune. I don't know him at all. I'm very privileged to know a lot of people in the VGM space, just because, you know, I've been in it for forever, and I'm now, I mean, as you pointed out at the beginning of the podcast, I've been doing it 10 years and I'm literally the great 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 grandfather of VGM at this point. I have the pleasure of knowing a lot of people, but I don't know Scott Tune Network at all. But I mean, he does a lot of different stuff. Like, he doesn't necessarily just do video game stuff, but like, you know, obviously, like he's done a great cover of Me Channel.
Yeah.
And
he did one with Carlos at one point. I forgot what it was.
Probably.
Yeah.
I hope one day he'll want to collab with me. but yeah, I know he's absolutely absolutely phenomenal. I've also been vibing with Sapphire, who does a lot of Persona covers. It's usually like the best music to have playing at the beginning of my streams because it's such a vibe.
Beautiful.
And then, you know, then I'll just come in and talk about really crass stuff, but it's fun. Those are the two right now that I've been personally vibing with the most.
Sweet. Well, we'll try to link them somehow, podcast wise. So, either way, thank you so much for, being on this podcast, being one of the first, I hope you have a great day, a great evening, rest of the week, rest of COVID stuff. Good. Yeah.
Thank you.
Either way, thank you so much.
And you as well.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah, dude. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. All right. cool. I don't know how to end podcasts, so that's
It's fine. Nobody does.